Gathering as a family around the table for a home-cooked meal is often held up as a remedy to many of our problems. We're often told that a made-from-scratch dinner is our ticket to health and happiness, but is it really as simple as that? Our next guests say the home-cooking push often puts intense pressure on families, especially women, and doesn't confront the real inequalities in our food system. Sarah Bowen and Jocelyn Brenton join us now. Sarah is an associate professor of sociology at North Carolina State University. Jocelyn is an assistant professor of sociology at Ithaca College. They're two of the three authors of the new book, Pressure Cooker, Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
And Jocelyn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
Well, Sarah, you write in the book that now, maybe more than ever, we have food as this matter of national concern, pop cultural concern. We keep hearing these stories, make our own food, make things from scratch. How much pressure is there for us to make this home-cooked meal?
Yeah, I think we've seen a ramping up of pressure. People look around and, you know, they see problems in the food system. They have concerns about food safety and lots of contradictory information about health and nutrition. And then that is combined with some kind of anxieties about what parents are doing and how children are growing up. And all of that kind of comes together in this ideas about family meals and this idea that if we can make good dinners from scratch with especially, you know, fresh produce and we can gather around the table and happily eat it together, that we can help make sure that we raise happy children and be happy families and good parents. And it's a lot. It's a lot that has to come together to make that happen.
Yeah, Jocelyn, I think a running theme in this book for many people across the United States, you focus on a particular area, easier said than done. Talk about what you did, you and your colleagues, to try to get at the stories of the challenges people face in trying to get this kind of meal on the table.
Sure. So this study began back in 2012, and we thought to ourselves, okay, so if we really want to know what's happening and sort of what people are facing when it comes to getting a meal on the table, then you really need to talk to the people who are doing the feeding work, and that's mothers. So what we did is we set out and we conducted in-depth interviews with 120 mothers. Some of them were grandmothers and caregivers. These women were middle-class women, but also most of them were low-income women. And we asked them, what is your day-to-day like for you? What sort of meals do you put on the table? And also, what do you think is an ideal meal? What does that look like to you? So those answers really form the majority of the book. And we also said, okay, we know what people are telling us when we talk to them, but we also want to see what they're doing in their everyday lives. And so we followed 12 families over time. We would go and visit them, you know, a dozen times over the course of a month, and we'd tag along at the grocery store, and we'd sit with them around their tables while they were eating, so we could actually see for ourselves what families are trying to do when it comes to getting a meal on the table.
And Sarah, we'll get into some of the particular challenges and obstacles they face, the people that you followed and talked to. But in general, was there anxiety for a lot of the people, even across income levels?
Yeah, what we found was that cooking and food was really important to almost all of the mothers in our study. And it was actually, it was 124 poor and working class mothers, but then even more than Jocelyn said. So it was over 150 moms. And so that was a lot of women, and food was really important to all of them. They were all trying really hard, you know, sometimes in slightly different ways. But almost all of them also felt like they were just not measuring up in at least some way, that they were failing on a regular basis, and that cooking and the time around dinner was stressful. And Anne Meyer, who's a sociologist at Minnesota, she told us just in a conversation we had at a conference that she's done time use studies, and the period from 5 to 7 p.m., if you look at how parents feel about their days, is actually the lowest point for parents. So it wasn't just the moms in these studies, but this is a bigger problem of parents feeling really stressed about dinner, and especially mothers.
We're talking to Sarah Bowen and Jocelyn Brenton about their new book, Pressure Cooker, Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. Jocelyn, let's look at some of the challenges now that these women were encountering trying to make this meal, this evening meal, as often as they could. One of them you encounter with a lot of the families, just the affordability of the food. They wanted better stuff. They couldn't necessarily afford it. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So one of the things we find is that these mothers care deeply about their children, and they all have an idea of what good nutrition is, and everybody sort of knows what that involves. The question is, do you have enough money to buy the foods that you need? And so a lot of the mothers in our study were having some real difficulties. Employment was difficult to find. Some mothers were employed only part-time. Some weren't able to secure employment at all. And so money was an incredibly big issue. Many of them said, oh, yeah, I would love to buy organic foods if only I had that kind of money. And it wasn't just the low-income families. It was also the middle-class families. And this was somewhat of a surprise. We tend to think of the middle class as people who are getting their basic needs met and doing okay. But even these families said, I would like to buy more organic foods. I'd like to shop locally or at the farmer's market. But there's no way that we can do that all the time. We just simply can't afford to do that.
And Sarah, it wasn't necessarily just about being able to afford the food, but being able to afford facilities to cook it in. I know at least one of the families you talked to, maybe more, had gone through eviction. They were trying to prepare these meals in an inexpensive hotel room. Can you talk about the kind of challenges you saw there?
Yeah, one of the 12 families, so we organized the book around nine families' stories, and one of those families had been evicted before, not when we did the interviews, but in between the interviews and when we went back to do the observations. So when we did the observations, we had the opportunity to see how hard it is to get dinner together when you're living in a hotel room, and actually how expensive it is. So Patricia Washington and her daughter and then her two grandchildren were all in a small, cramped hotel room, and so they had a microwave and a hot plate and a tiny fridge, and that was all they had. There was a grocery store across the street, so that helped a little bit, but it was still hard to go back and forth because they couldn't really stock up in big quantities, which made it hard to take advantages of sales, and she talked about that, how she would like to be able to stock up when things were cheap, but she couldn't. And then, of course, the problem that was even worse was that they were super limited in what they could buy. So they were buying a lot of TV dinners, some frozen pizzas, and kind of heatable soups, but those things are expensive compared to raw ingredients, so their food stamps weren't going as fast as they could, and you know they were really low on food. Sometimes Patricia and her daughter would skip meals so the kids would have something to eat, and we saw that in other families in our study because the mom felt like their most important job was making sure the kids had something to eat, but then they were going without themselves some of the time. So that was just really hard, And Patricia, we didn't have a lot of homeless families in our study, but more broadly, we did have a lot of families who lacked basic kitchen tools or who would have the electricity cut off or the stove wouldn't work. And so we really saw how sometimes this ideal that it's not really that hard to cook, it ignores the real problems that lots of families are facing.
Jocelyn, another challenge you encountered with families was difficult scheduling. If they had jobs, they might not have a reliable schedule. How big a factor was that in making it difficult to make regular meals?
Yeah, unpredictable work schedules was a huge factor for a lot of our families, and especially for the working class families who worked, for example, at fast food chains. They would get ready for their shift, and they might receive a call at the last minute that says, we don't need you, or they might be asked to work overtime. And also, they only learn about their schedules on a weekly or a biweekly basis. So this makes it very difficult to plan and be home for the family meal. And in addition to that, a lot of these families didn't have what many Americans take for granted, which is just a working vehicle. And so when you don't have a car and you can't get to your job and leave the house when you want to, we saw that a lot of the mothers we got to know, they were relying on a vast network of family and friends to give them rides to places. And they would all sort of, you know, share resources and work together. But if somebody's ride falls through that day, it just sort of throws the rest of your day into chaos. So it made getting to work difficult. And then the actual nature of having an unpredictable work schedule made it very challenging for these families to sort of create that ideal meal scenario in which everybody's gathered around the table at 5:30 or 6 p.m. and they're all having a conversation about how their day went.
We continue our conversation with Sarah Bowen and Jocelyn Brenton. They're professors of sociology and co-authors of the new book, Pressure Cooker: Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you hear this message a lot, that home cooking is the solution to a lot of our problems? Are you able to do this? Do you find it stressful, difficult to pull off sometimes, all the time? Why? And do you feel pressure, maybe stress, or even shame about what you end up being able to serve your family? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jocelyn, we've just got into a few of the challenges, but I want to get into some of the solutions you talk about. A lot of times it's presented as individually we have to fix this. You and your co-authors, Jocelyn, see this as a wider problem and that needs bigger solutions. What are some of those?
In the book, we talk about how we can be working at three different levels. We can be working at the national level, we can be working at the community level, and we can be working at the individual level. And this is problems with our food system, problems with population health. These are bigger issues that we have. It's not just a matter that parents aren't making the right choices for their children. And to the extent that parents have limited choice or aren't feeding the kids the way they want, it's because there's some bigger problems going on around them. So, for example, at the national level, we say that we really need to invest in our families. If we value families and we want our nation to be healthier, then we're going to have to change some of our policies. And that starts with making food a basic human right. And there are other ways in which we make other things basic human rights in our society, like education or the right to representation. And food is so essential to our health and well-being and our daily functioning. So we think that we should make food a basic human right, and we can do that by expanding some of the safety nets that we have for people, and the food stamps program is one of that. And we could also look at what it would look like to better fund school lunch programs. And so those are, for example, some of the things that we can do at the national level. That we also just need to make sure people have a living wage and that families are supported with things like maternity and paternity leave and paid sick leave. These sorts of policies go a long way in supporting families and making sure they're healthy.
And Sarah, in the book, you also talk about, and Jocelyn just mentioned, community-level solutions. You found in some different places innovative ways where people try to work together, use existing facilities to make it more possible for people to have meals. What kind of things did you see?
Yeah, so this project was a research project, but we also did a lot of community-based work in the three counties that we were working in. And so we saw that people are already doing things to support, and these should be expanded. One relatively simple thing is that a lot of the churches and nonprofits and community groups in some of these places, they were having weekly dinners, like maybe on a weeknight, where people would come together. And this was a way that moms could and dads could not have to cook for their kids, that they could have someone else do the cooking. But I think it goes beyond that. It's also the opportunity to sit down at a table with your kids and talk to people that you might not know very well, get to know new people, learn a little bit from someone who's maybe a bit different from you. And in the book, we talk about some other ideas that are maybe a little harder to implement, but could start small. For example, a lot of schools and churches have big kitchens that are going unused a lot of the day. So could those be repurposed to make meals that people could heat up at the end of the day? And I just saw today that there's a school in Indiana that's doing some of that. So places are doing it, but it's not very widespread right now. And if you have money, there's options that can kind of help people get a healthy dinner on the table, but those are unaffordable. So we want to kind of think through how we can make some of those options affordable to more people.
I want to bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jennifer is with us in La Crosse. Jennifer, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Jennifer?
Yeah, so just kind of hearing a little bit about this. My boyfriend and I were in our mid to late 30s, and he unfortunately had to undergo a heart stent. And with that, you know, there's the low sodium diet, or not diet, but more of a lifestyle change. So trying to meet the needs for him and his healthier eating, it's kind of a challenge, budget-wise, trying to make sure that I meet all the needs that he needs, along with myself, and then finding the time to cook these meals every day for him and myself gets to be a lot. was. One thing we found that I found helpful with my mother, she has a garden, and there's times where once a week we will take turns cooking a larger meal, and then we portion off enough for my boyfriend and I, and then I'll send my parents home with a meal for two.
Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing your story. Well, that makes me think of a lot of things I saw in your book. Jocelyn, one of those is cooking for someone with special health needs. At least one of the families, I think one of the children, had diabetes. That just adds a whole new difficulty and maybe, as Jennifer was saying, expense, if you have to have that in mind.
Yeah, this was a really prominent issue for many of the families that we spoke with. So you may have, like Jennifer's case, you may have a partner who has a health issue. You may have a child with a health issue. One of the mothers in our study and who is in the book, she has a child who's on ADHD medication, and this suppresses the child's appetite. So she's trying to get the kid to eat, and maybe he doesn't want to eat. So as Jennifer notes, there's a lot of negotiating that goes on when we feed our families, and there's a lot of time and thought that has to be put into it, especially if somebody has sort of a complicated diet or needs to eat in a very specific way. This makes the work of feeding really complicated, and sometimes it can take the joy out of it as well when you have a lot of restrictions and you have to be very careful about this. I know my mother-in-law was diagnosed with adult onset of diabetes several years ago, and I have seen firsthand how everything has changed, and food has sort of become the center for them in the sense that she has to be so careful and measure out different foods, and this has really made feeding complex. Also, a lot of the families we got to know, they just struggled with things like kids who are picky eaters, and they spend time making these meals, and then the kids don't want to eat it, and it sort of becomes a battle. So this is the sort of stuff that doesn't get talked about when individual families are encouraged to just work harder, shop smarter, and put a great meal on the table.
And Sarah, Jennifer also mentioned, you know, working together in this case with her parents to kind of team up. Did you see a lot of that kind of solution where people reach outside of the family and try to work together, whether it's another family member, a neighbor, or whatever?
We did. We saw, it really varied. Some of the people in our study lived close to lots of friends and family, and some people didn't, which I think we see in the United States more broadly. But we did see lots of people sharing with neighbors. We had people like Jennifer mentioned, who a lot of people in rural areas especially, who were able to get fresh produce during the summer, who people who would cook for others or have other people cook for them to help them out. For some of the poor families in our study, that could be a really important survival strategy of people helping others when there were food shortages. And we also saw that sometimes it was a source of stress, especially for the families that were, you know, coming really close to running out of food at the end of the month, where people said that even if the kids just have friends over, that was a source of stress because they would then have to provide extra snacks or things like that. So we saw so many people working together, working really hard to try to get by, but also that even at the community level, just people needed a little bit more support.
Jocelyn, in our last minute or so, the issues you're talking about, do you think they're flying under the radar in the national discussion? Obviously, they're front and center for the people you talk to, but are we just overlooking these realities?
I think at the national level, people really care about food. I think we hear people talking about food, and sometimes those conversations go in frustrating directions, like should we be cutting the amount we allocate to food stamps? And so I think people care. They care about the environmental footprint and what's going on with, large industrial production of food. I think what is often overlooked is that day-to-day labor that people undertake to feed their families. And so individual advice is really alluring, to tell people, like, chop vegetables in bulk on the weekend or make several meals on a Sunday so that you have these healthy meals that you can eat throughout the week. And on the face of things, those sort of solutions, they sound simple and they sound doable. But what we saw is that when people tried to put these solutions into practice in their everyday lives, it always fell apart because there's so many challenges coming at modern families from all sorts of different directions. So the big takeaway from our book is families are already trying really hard, and still they're falling short. So we know that we have a bigger problem on our hands.
We'll leave it there. Jocelyn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
And Sarah, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Sarah Bowen is Associate Professor of Sociology at North Carolina State University. Jocelyn Brenton is an Assistant Professor of Sociology at Ithaca College. Their new book is Pressure Cooker: Why Home Cooking Won't Solve Our Problems and What We Can Do About It.